going to go ahead and get started as you're getting water. Do I have to talk into the microphone? Do I have to, or can I stand there? Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because I can talk loud enough that they can hear me, trust me. Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that nobody's recording and probably good that I'm not at the microphone. So we Latinas, we love the microphone. So you're going to have to grab me over here if I keep talking. So my name is Charlene Barrientos Ortiz.
And I'm Maria Evelyn Morreo, and I go by my initials, which are M-E, in the community.
And can you hear me in the back? Excellent. I didn't need that microphone. So we are here to talk a little bit about WSHAD, a Count and Gown collaboration for heart health. We are funded from the NIH.
And click.
Yeah. Oh, I guess everybody has to say this. We have no relationship.
Neither one of us.
Yeah. Although if you do, if somebody has that in here, let us know how we can do that. Objectives are for this session are to give you key 4 steps on how to engage the Latino community, and we're going to actually give you more than 4, but that's what we initially talked about. To discuss 2 challenges inherent to the Count and Gown collaborations for research. And do folks know what the Count and Gown collaborations are?
No.
It's where universities were in town, or a university set in a town, and the town didn't always talk to the university. So how did that relationship work? So we borrowed that.
And to identify benefits associated with establishing community advisory committees specific to research. Me? I do need to use it. No, I'm kidding. I think part of it is the height reality, but that's okay. Turn it towards me. Okay. Better? Okay.
She only has 1 child, I have 3.
Okay. Makes a difference.
Latinos using cardio health actions to reduce risk. And initially, NIH funded the project, and we only had 2 collaborators, and that was the University of Colorado and Denver Health, which is the county hospital in Denver, Colorado. But what was attached to this project is that in order for these 2 partners to get the money, they had to have cultural competency training throughout the 5 years. So, like 2 months after they were meeting, they said, we need another partner, and it's the Community Advisory Board.
Nice. Me. So a few key principles that we want to share, and I think it's important to share with you that this presentation itself came about through a community process. So our Community Advisory Council came together and defined what pieces we all wanted to have included in this presentation. So I'm not here speaking for Maria Evelyn Morreo. I'm really speaking on behalf of the Community Advisory Council members and everyone else who has, can you hear me?
Yes.
Participated in this process. And so I think the most important piece for us was to always, in fact, be real. So when we're coming to the table, sometimes we can, some of us can put airs up and et cetera, but for us, key is be real, upfront, and in fact, what the partners are asking of the community itself, and vice versa, so that we are all coming to the table with honesty and can set up that trust that is so important within our Latino community. If there's not confianza, there's nothing beyond. So
eligibility for the CAC, when we were at the researchers said create an advisory committee. So we were pretty flexible with, because they weren't sure what that meant. So the eligibility to be on the community advisory committee were that you were Latino or Hispanic, but usually identified as Chicano, Mexicano, or something else. That you lived in Denver and that you received services at Denver Health, the county hospital, or are eligible to receive services there. So one of the big, huge lessons learned that we had to talk about is that we were coming into community space and that we were the visitors, because oftentimes researchers believe that community are the visitors, the other way around. So we had to talk a lot about that. That you were going to have to hear their story, and it could take an hour, and you should.
Or 2 years, as we heard from different experience.
And the concept of time means different things to different people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other piece of it is that when community research has taken place in the community, there are fears from sharing our true stories, being authentic with one another. And I think it's important to recognize that and at times validate those.
And then respect confidentiality. How many researchers do we have in here? Okay, all those researchers, just kidding. but a part of research, and I really, as a part of the research team, really tell the researchers that the HIPAA laws that they hate because there's so much paperwork really protect community. And that actually makes researchers accountable and respecting people's confidentiality. So you can do a lot with that. So, and then everything they tell you has value. Have you ever asked a question and then like 15 minutes later you get the answer? You have to hear the story because in between those words they might be telling you even more than you even asked and that you need later on.
So the process began in engaging community through a process. One, the research team came together and began this process that in fact Charlene was instrumental in making happen, in which community members were identified. But they were identified not as saying, okay, here's the list of individuals, but it was more of going out into the community and listening to concerns and, do you want to give more input?
So when they were asking to do this, you know, I could have loaded up the whole committee with my whole family. I'm related to half of Denver and then half of California. But to be real and to be authentic, because I think that the researchers were being real, what we did was we did go into the community and we actually asked the community to give us referrals of who they thought were gatekeepers. And now let me say it's a little bit different, because when some researchers talk about gatekeepers, they talk about business owners. We were talking about the elder who lives on the block who can tell you the history 4 years. So those were our gatekeepers. So we also took them to coffee. Now, how many folks in here drink coffee? How many of you know it's really bad for you? But we're still going to drink it, right? I'm with you. I'm a Starbucks Gold Card member. So that really was helpful because we did do a lot of coffee. And for those who didn't, they drank, they had tea or juice. But that was really important to sit down and have coffee so that we can connect with folks.
The second piece that I tend to think is, all pieces are key within this process, but it was when coming together as a group, it continues to be so important to define clearly what our values are within that group, how we are going to interact, how respeto and confianza and all of those pieces are key. If that doesn't exist within the group, then it is rare that we can move to the next step, which is to share openly, to define things collaboratively as a group. Which also includes, and this is wonderful with our group, and hopefully if it's beneficial for you, for your groups, you'll also incorporate it. But part of the process is every time we meet, there's a time dedicated to conocimiento. And conocimiento is, in fact, sharing where we're at, and it's connected to a question that day. Whatever it is, it could be today was a horrible day, or today is a wonderful day, or my key remembrance as a child is, I don't know, the time I fell off of the guanabana tree or whatever that be. So those pieces were key because it began and continues every time that we come together. Again, that trust process.
So in the conocimiento process, the researchers also have to participate as well as the cast members. So if we're going to tell all our secrets, guess what? We're going to hear everybody's secrets. Now we know when they're lying. So they do tell us, but it is also a really great process, and we'll be here and we'll probably have lots of questions.
And I think that we have been, this particular group has evolved and grown into a place in which we've been able to call each other on whether or not we've been authentic, and it's been a wonderful experience. It hasn't been a negative one.
Yeah, we could see that, maybe.
Yes. Next.
Okay. So ongoing engagement, and for us, we are at the end of our fifth year. And so like research money or research or prevention money, once the money's gone, we say, so we'll see you later. So the group now is getting together and they're going to actually apply for money where they're going to let us be a part of them.
Woohoo! Yeah. Oh, I did not sign that waiver.
So here are the CAC members. We're going to introduce you to them quickly. Here are some of the CAC members.
From the CACS perspective, meaning the Community Advisory Council members' perspective, I think in order for us to come to the table, we need one, to be engaged. We believe that we are engaging in an active and open dialogue. We trust that our point of view is in fact honored. So believe it or not, I've been in Community Advisory Councils that aren't quite that. You come to the table, you sign off, and you leave. This process, in fact, is very much the individuals. We spent hours discussing what pieces would be come into this. I mean, we truly, all of us, believe that this is a transformative process and that our input and our time and energy in it will transform our community, and that, in fact, we can make a difference.
So now you meet the research team, and there are many. Go ahead and go to the next slide.
Yeah, we don't have.
And so this is from the researcher's perspective, and I really wanted to share with you that all of these slides were from different points of view. So the researcher who's not here today, what she's asking for people to pay attention to is to take time to deliver, develop relationships, show up in the community, not just when you're funded, to be present and visible in the community, volunteer your time, be on a board, write a proposal for somebody, and then be a learner and remember the community has wisdom and experience to it, and that they are the expert, right?
And I think the piece that is key also is, Charlene and I sometimes share about, in Denver, we have what I identify as the Chicano old guard, which is the typical suspects, the ones that always get invited. And I'm originally from Venezuela, so when I come to the table, I've been there, 14 years, and I'm still the new one on the block, right? So I think that it's important to be open to that grandma at the corner or granddad or whomever has that knowledge and insight to share. Next.
So I represent the project staff who has a foot into the world. How many of us are in the room? I know there are a few of us. So, and one thing I would just like to say is that if you have folks who can walk in the Latino community and the academic world, just have a lot of support, and we have ideas on how that works for us. So our challenges are that traditional research partnerships, they really don't work in community. We know that, right? So that even the presentation earlier said that they use the community-based principles to guide a process. You can even do that in traditional research, and it's totally worth it. It takes time, but it's totally worth it. Trust and time are an issue, and it really is about power and control. And sometimes we don't want to give it up or we don't want to take it, but so we have to ask the question. But the benefits are...
It is, in fact, a truly culturally congruent process. And the product at the end, even though it may have taken longer to get to it, far outweighs one in which it was quickly done and community wasn't involved. Using our collective power, we, in fact, believe and we are, in fact, influencing and advocating for change through a grassroots and collaborative perspective. And to researchers.
This is what we say, we believe in the power of community. And oftentimes, even at big conferences like this, we'll ask the question, where is community? And sometimes we're just kind of dressed up, but we are a community. So we believe in the power of community. And we also believe in strong and healthy relationships. You know, lots of times when partnerships are put together, they're usually put together around funding, and then they go away. But if you have a healthy relationship, like all relationships, it just goes a lot longer and a lot further.
Oops, that's it. So thank you.
So thank you to all of our presenters. And now if the audience has any questions, this is the time. If you could face them too. So please address the questions to all of our presenters who have had different presentation from Los Angeles, from Montgomery County, from all over the country, and from Colorado. So, yes.
All of you, just amazing materials that you've developed. I mean, from the person from Los Angeles, I actually work at San Francisco Health Plan, so we're doing a lot of the same types of work.
Okay.
And I have no idea what's proprietary and what's not, but are you willing to share?
Yes.
public charge.
Not becoming a public charge.
Uh-huh.
Can you expand on the public charge piece? Because were you referring to that for immigrants with visas who didn't want to become a public charge as they were moving to citizenship or undocumented immigrants? Because
it's for
they may not
all.
Have
it doesn't matter. It's basically what that is it's the areas that people can access care without it going against them if they're trying to become citizens or getting their papers here in the United States.
So if they already have a visa but not for undocumented?
It could be for undocumented as well because it's still they're trying to access care and it's things that they can access care without having to worry about it.
I guess it's because some people are afraid often.
And a lot of that is cultural, especially with, I saw when I was doing actually out in the district, public health district, from Mexico, because we have so many of the Mexican population, no, we can't do that, or we can't apply for these services because it's going to go against us as we're trying to stay here. And they don't understand that it's not. So that's why we brought that into play as one of the important things for helping them to not be afraid to access care.
Okay, to not worry about the public charge piece.
That's right. Well, because they don't know. They don't know what they can or cannot access. And so a lot of places, a lot of the lower, a lot of the community clinics are not asking them what their status is.
Right.
So, but they're still afraid to access care. I know that a lot of people feel that because we have such a large amount of folks that are in Los Angeles County illegally, that they put a high drain on the medical system. That's not true because most of them are afraid to access care. So we're trying to help them get healthy and show them where they can go for services if they really need to have services and not be afraid. Sure.
Yes, sir.
For us, the consulates are not health related.
Uh-huh.
They don't even know a lot of the things that we even talk about, so they were really happy to have us come to the table. I did not create the program. I came into it. My ex-boss used to work for the Pan American Health Organization, so he was the one that came up, and he's from Latin America, and he was the one that came up with the idea of working with the consulates, so he actually went and talked to them and said, listen, you have an audience here that may or may not have the information that they need. So let's do this. And as you can see, one of the things that we have was like with the city. The city of Los Angeles has participated and supported a lot of the ideas that we had. I mean, there's always the pros and cons, but knowing that we're trying to help a large part of the population, it usually wasn't too hard. And then, of course, some of the private sector is a little bit more difficult depending on whether they are pro or con. You know, what's going on. And if they have something at stake that will help them to promote what they're doing.
Do you have any experience on that, Graciela?
No, I think that what you are bringing up is very important. I think that the business community is a very important and interested party because many times Latinos have small businesses and then they hire people and who do not have access to healthcare themselves may not have access to healthcare. So they are an interested party, but I don't think that we really have been successful in that front. But it is something that hopefully with community engagement we can move forward in that front.
Do you have anything to add?
I think in Denver we've had a number of small businesses that have come together with different key health issues so that there's a mom and pop or restaurant that was been very involved in the tobacco cessation and tobacco prevention, and especially the secondhand smoke effect, and were very active and very supportive of funding this. And so I think that it's connecting to with those for-profit small business owners in what's in it for them, meaning what's in their self-interest, right? And that's really how we get individuals and especially small business owners who are working, what, 24 hours a day? You know, but I do think over and over again, I'm the executive director of a nonprofit in Denver, and over again, I hear from our Latino business owners, you know, you guys can ask us for help. You know, we want to be able to give money to our community.
Mm-hmm.
So ask us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the trend I'm seeing more and more, at least in Denver. And I think the only other piece that I would share is that I think that by state, things change a lot. So in Denver, we have House Bill 1023, which limits what we can offer in state funds to non-residents or non-U.S. citizens. So it depends on,
It's the same in Los Angeles.
So I think it depends on which services and what. We've been very, very fortunate in that there's some state workers that look the other way when we're offering service,
right?
Because they truly do believe that it's the individual that needs the service, not the green card.
Yeah, I just want to add that on a project that is not related to this, but it was one of my research projects, in Baltimore, it was a diabetes prevention and control of IUC. We did involve the local business, and actually we made them partners, champions of health. However, they are very busy. We had a nice breakfast and ceremonies and flags and all kinds of activities, and they were happy to put the information in their stores, maybe tell the people, go to this clinic, they can help you, this is where you can find help, but they are very busy and they are trying to survive, so any time away from their business is not well spent.
One of the areas in which we've been very successful, we have one of our programs is HIV prevention in AIDS services, and it's a nonprofit, and we work with a local gay bar that services the Latino population, and we've done the testing on site on a Saturday night, and have had 17 tests done. I mean, we really are in the community, because the community wants to support, the community wants to, and this is through Denver. Our partners is Denver Health, and we also are doing a research project with them connected to the HIV and social networking, HIV testing. And so I think that they want to be there. It's just in whatever they can be there.
I think also in Los Angeles it's the same way. Not necessarily, well, in this project too, we had, when we would do like our health fair events and different events, we would invite the community. The television stations were very much, and the radio stations were very much willing to work with us and give us free space and free time to do what we needed to do. And then sometimes trying to find out who those community folks were, like through the consulates with their Binational Week, they have agencies that they work with that we could work along with as well if they know what it is that we want to do. So again, it's back to the partnership and finding the right people that are willing to make that fit.
Any, yes, please?
Yes, I was interested in the screening and the follow-up that you did as a result of your health fairs. The providers of care that you utilize besides, say, the health department?
Oh, absolutely, because actually the health department doesn't have a whole lot to provide.
Right.
The public health department really doesn't. So what happened is when people would get screened, we put together resources. So that was one of the pieces that we had where we would give them places that they could go. The folks that were screened, that were doing the screening, tried to get the information from them so that if something was abnormal, then they would follow up with them to try and get them seen somewhere locally. And the big mega health fair that you saw, they actually had providers that were there so that what that particular agency does when they do, and they do a lot of mini health fairs all over LA County and Orange County and Riverside, they actually have clinics that they can refer the clients to try and get them seen. And even when we would do some of our stuff, we will tell them, this is where you can go if you're having these issues. And if it was a one-on-one, then our staff on occasion would actually work with the patients to try and get them seen. I got a call not long ago from the Consulate of Columbia. They had a pregnant female who was looking for a place to deliver who was in Los Angeles, and they wouldn't let her fly home for her delivery, and trying to find a place where she could go, and it wouldn't cost her an arm and a leg because she didn't have the money. So we tried to do that as well.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. This was a very exciting session.
Oh,
I think it was very invigorating.
out.
I don't know how you do it next.
I'm not
so once we end.
I can try, but what has happened, I haven't been the one developing that stuff. It's on
the
other. Can you hit other?
I'm creating it in general.